Welcome to Author Voices on Air and the stories behind the stories of today's literature and their authors. A presentation of Author Solutions and its publishers. Our host today connects with the writer to share the vision and inspiration behind their works. Insightful, informative, and always entertaining. Please welcome our host for this week's edition of Author Voices on Air.
Welcome to Author Voices on Air, and I'm your host, Rick Bell. Our next book is Life's Journey, Love, Live, and Learn. Born in 1946 in Muirton, a mining village in County Durham, in the aftermath of World War II, the author of this book was to find himself growing up in interesting times. Coming from a working class family where his parents had struggled to make a good home in which to raise their children, he was to follow the same pattern and try to make his life easier for his own children. He experienced the education system of the 1950s and 60s with all its failings, encompassed with the suffered failure at the 11 plus. And if that doesn't get your attention, I don't know what will. And joining me now is the author himself. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Terry Thomas to the show. Welcome, Terry.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Now, as I mentioned during the introduction, this is about your journey. So let's talk about the part of the journey that evolved into the book that we're talking about today. Tell me where you got the idea for the book and how that became the published manuscript.
Well, I've always had a desire to write a book about my life's experience. And I think, like a lot of other people, you don't realise the events that you've actually been involved with during your lifespan. And I'm now watching my 8 grandchildren growing up. And I want to leave them some kind of legacy of my life story, so they don't always consider me as the old granddad that I am. And that was one of the big inspirations, was basically for my grandchildren.
Now, I know you've led a very interesting life, and I know many people out there will enjoy reading this book, but you must have had a particular person in mind. I know you mentioned that you wrote this for your grandchildren, but as, you know, readers in the general public, who did you have in mind as the kind of person that you think or hope will enjoy this book?
Well, I think anyone and everyone that is bringing up a family or trying to improve their lifestyle for themselves and their family, and it's not only during the 1950s, 1970s where my life was, but to those who experienced the same challenges that are happening today. And it's not until you start analysing the content of the book that you realise that some things really haven't changed. So I think it would appeal to anyone that is basically growing up and trying to bring up a family.
There's a book that I think will really interest a lot of people, a lot of different age groups of people. But I also think the book has a lot to teach the reader. But if you could choose one thing from the book that you think or at least hope the reader will learn or take away from reading the book, what would that one thing be?
Well, as I explained earlier, life can be a struggle sometimes. It's always important to remain positive and treasure the good times. Remember, there's always more than one solution to any problem. And keep aiming higher, and you will find you just may surprise yourself. The one thing, if I would say, after reading my book, if the reader can say, I can relate to that, then the writing of my story, not only for my grandchildren would have been worthwhile, but also to those people who have bought the book and hopefully have seen themselves in the content of the text of the book.
Now, it is obviously, as I mentioned, it's your life story. It's a, you know, it's a book about you growing up and, you know, your family, your mum and dad, and your own children and so on. But tell us about some of the other characters and scenes in the book that stand out for you.
Well, this is difficult because there's many characters I loved and respected who played a major part in shaping my life. Therefore, it's very difficult to select a few, but in my school days, which were very challenging, with many stories relating to the antics of not only my school friends, but also to the teachers, who were majority ex-army, because it was the early 50s until the 60s when I was at school. But if I was to pick out two people from the stories while I was working at the coal mines at the Nat Pit, and these guys were called Loco Ted because he was the guy who maintained the steam locomotives, and Jimmy the Windy Pick, repairman, who repaired the pneumatic drills. And that was really my first job, working with Jimmy the Windy Pick. And later, I was privileged to have so-called Ted basically tell me to climb into the firebox of a locomotive, which isn't a very big space. And the way he convinced me that I was to get in that box was something that stuck in my mind. Even now I'm laughing just thinking of that situation.
Clearly something that brings back a lot of memories. And when you were writing the book, it must have brought back, you know, reliving a lot of those memories. But tell me about some of the challenges that you faced when you sat down, you had decided to write this book. You wanted to put as much into the book as possible, but you wanted to make it a good read. So tell us a little about that experience.
The challenges were what to leave out of the book, really, because you have so many good stories that keep coming up from the depth of your mind, that the challenge is which were the best ones I should put into the book without making it a long, boring story. So that the challenge really is with filtering through the content that you had available to put into to explain your life story. So I found it very difficult what to leave. And even now, as the book's finished and published, I still think of things that, oh, maybe I should have put that in. It's a constant progress, but the challenge was really selecting what would go into the book.
It must have been a very rewarding experience once you had written, you'd edited the manuscript, you sent it off to the publisher, and suddenly coming back to you was the printed, published, final edition of the book. How did that feel?
Oh, that was, it was an amazing feeling, because at the end when I was pulling the book together, I actually took a trip to the village I was born in, Merton Sheen, and walked around the village and saw the changes. Took some photographs, which are in the book, of the village as it is now. And to see these things reflected in the book, something that I pulled together, was a really nice feeling of something well worth doing. And I felt I'd achieved my aim just looking at the cover.
What has been the response from people so far who've read the book?
A lot of them have come back and said, I can remember when I was at school and we did this. And I think it's people coming back and relating their life to what I put on paper. And their life was very similar in a lot of contexts. A lot of them might have been in a different part of the country. They might have been at a grammar school or whatever. But it was coming back and saying, I can remember when I did this. So I felt that I jogged their memory to enjoy some parts of their life that maybe they thought had been forgotten.
Yeah, real conversation starters there. We've talked about this book. Let's now talk about Life in the Sand, which is another book you've written.
Yes. Life in the Sand was my first book. And it was inspired, again, by my grandchildren, because as they get older, they tend to forget that grandparents did have a life before them. And I had a really interesting time in Saudi Arabia. And it was a turning point for me in my life to select a career that I was going to go forward in. And it's about my adventures during that year in Saudi Arabia, again, about the people I met, keeping the technical side of it down to a minimum, but relating to the people within the book and how it affected my life.
And you're working on a third book as well.
Well, the two books I've written take me through the time I was born. The second book takes me from the time I was born up to the point I'm actually leaving to go to Saudi Arabia. The first book is while I was in Saudi Arabia and the effect I'd had on the experience I was gaining. Now, the third book I'm looking at is my time after returning from Saudi Arabia and taking up my career in the petroleum industry offshore in the North Sea. And I'll be encompassing some of the adventures that I got into, really, and the people I met, again, trying to keep the technical points to a minimum, if only to outline the story and enhance the characters in the story. Would basically finish a trilogy of my life from being born to my retirement.
Can you see yourself carrying on with your writing after the third book?
There's always a book left unwritten. And I think once I get the third book out, I'm sure during the time I'm writing it, that other thoughts will be coming into my mind that, that could be book four.
Well, that's good news. Well, in closing, we've talked about a lot. We've talked about this book. We've talked about the first book, and we talked about the book that you're working on, and we're looking forward to those two, reading those two as well. But is there anything that you would like to add, anything you'd like to tell us that we haven't covered that you feel is important for our listeners and your readers to know?
If there's one thing, I would say the number of people I've spoke to since I started writing that have said that, I would love to write my story as well. And I think I would be encouraging those people to just sit down and scribble your thoughts down on paper, and it will surprise you how much comes to the forefront of your mind to make a very interesting book.
Very wise words. And as you say, I haven't spoken to many authors. They will often say that the difficulty is having the courage to sit down and make a start.
I've got a feeling that my third book, I'll have the same problem with deciding what content I would be putting in, because there'll be so many stories that are now sitting in the back of my mind that haven't even been unearthed yet, but something will click while I'm writing or telling a part of a story, and it'll trigger that other thought. Oh, yes, that's another interesting point, and I'll bring that in. The other thing, what I did try to do was write about my life, but also encompassing the thread of what was going on in the world while I was progressing in my career, in my family life. Things that touched you directly, and others that were sitting on the periphery. So I kind of try and keep a time scale or a timeline going in parallel to my actually living life.
And your book certainly achieves that. Well, thank you for that. If you'd like to find out more about Terry's books, why not visit his website at www.terrythomas.net. Life's Journey, Love, Live and Learn is published by Ex Libris and is available direct from the website at exlibris.com and all good bookstockers. I'd like to once again thank my guest, Terry Thomas, for joining us on the show, and we wish him every success with his books. This is Rick Bell for Togmere Radio 2.0. Thank you for listening.
Author Voices on Air returns after these short messages.
Congratulations on getting your book published. The effort you put into your work is truly commendable. But what's next? What will happen to all the knowledge you have worked so hard to acquire to produce your book? Here at TogiNet Radio, we can provide you a platform to keep your knowledge working for you through the power of podcast. The subjects our podcasts cover are as varied as the grains of sand on a beach. From life coaching, to military resources, to business success, even to the paranormal. We have a place for everyone. To get started on your next step, call Scott at 903-787-5880 or email him at scott@toginetradio.com. That's scott@toginetradio.com.
Welcome back to Author Voices on Air as we continue the stories behind the stories of today's literature and their authors.
Welcome to Author Voices on Air, and I'm your host, Rick Bell. Our next book is Lessons for Life, based on the lives of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. In the 1970s and 80s, the author and his wife were privileged, together with a group of friends named John and Sally, Dennis and Frida, Dave, Richard, and Jill, to lead a series of intensive Bible studies with a changeling group of undergraduate students each Sunday evening during the university term. The author, Professor Peter Elwood, joins me for the second of two interviews about his book. In this interview, he shares with us the story of how those Bible studies back in the 1970s and 80s became the inspiration behind his book. Welcome, Peter, and thank you for joining me once again. Now, this book could be said to be different from the previous book we talked about. Lessons for Life, based on the lives of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Now, I've mentioned during my introduction that this goes back to the 1970s and 80s when your wife, yourself, and a group of friends ran a series of Bible studies. Now, let's talk about how those days inspired the writing of this book. How did it come about?
I was privileged to be married to a woman who cared deeply for the community and wanted to be involved and help the community. And she became trained in counselling, and together with a few friends, they set up a counselling service which now, 40 or 50 years later, has grown and is involved with centres throughout an area in Cardiff and around Cardiff. We became concerned and her particularly, in the way that the families were breaking up. More and more children were becoming parentless and taken into care. We ourselves fostered a series of children, and we actually adopted and enriched our family by adoption. And now, at 50 years later, I still have a foster child who calls me Dad and for whom I care, and has been very, very damaged in his infancy and childhood through neglect and the loss of his mother. So we felt that we had to do teaching to students. The students were mostly unmarried, and we gave them as much teaching as we could over meal times as well as in our studies about the biblical teaching on the sanctity of life, on the value of family, and the duty that we have to instruct our children and give them a moral basis which would last them into life. And one of the main areas of our teaching was the Old Testament patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, not because they were shining ideals whom we should follow, but men who made mistakes and who learned from their mistakes and went on to live lives which became increasingly involved with their neighbors, with their society, in a good way. But it was learning from their mistakes. And we often would teach on the basis that a wise man learns by observing the mistakes of others rather than by making those mistakes himself.
And that's a very valid point you made there, and the fact that, in summary, really, is the fact that if mankind never made mistakes, then we'd probably still be living in a primitive lifestyle. It is your mistakes that teach you and teach others, yeah, and so on. Now, obviously, the work in the Bible studies you did back all those decades ago had a big impact on the students that you were teaching at the time. But moving forward to this book, what do you hope that they will learn and take away from reading this book? And who is your intended audience?
I would hope that those who wish to have a secure marriage and bring up a good family who will contribute to society will be concerned to read a book, Lessons for Life. Where do we get our lessons from? From society at present, with the light view of marriage, with the increasing number of children who have to go into care because of neglect. I could wish that there was a greater concern for family life and for marriage. And these men made mistakes, and they learnt and put things right and lived lives that were profitable and can be lessons for us. And the more we learn from the mistakes of others, the more successful our lives will be.
How would you introduce this book? If you were speaking to a friend or a colleague or an acquaintance or even a stranger for that matter, and they heard you talking about your book and wanted to know a little bit about it, how would you introduce this book?
I think I would simply say that my own life was enriched enormously from reading the stories of these men. They're real men. And they lived in the real world. These are not fiction. And they're honest men in that their mistakes are recorded. And I think if we read these and absorb the lessons, and we will enrich our own life, our own marriage, and our own handling of children. There's the example of Joseph, who is mishandled by his parents scandalously. And we can see how not to show favoritism within our family. There's the contrast between Esau and Jacob. One was the favor of the father, one was the the other was favorite of the mother. And there was endless hostility between the two, the two brothers. By reading these stories, we can make a better job of our own family and our own marriage.
When you were writing the book, how did you decide what to include in the book? And that must have been a challenge in itself. So how did you overcome that challenge?
I think I just read it and saw where my weaknesses lay and where the the unfortunate behaviour of friends or people I'd heard about, where there was a lesson about it in one of these, the lives of one of these men. And I would focus on that and show how in the life of Abram, in the life of Jacob, there were lessons for us. They're not old stories, but they're rattling good studies, rattling good stories, and we can learn so much from them.
Now, the book is based on the life, as we've mentioned, of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob and Joseph. But how much of you as the person, as the author, is also in this book?
Not too much. I mean, I was tempted at times to write about our experience in fostering, and we had a lot of problems, the children we fostered, and some of the children we adopted had enormous problems. I was tempted, but then I felt, no, that would expose my family, my children, those I love dearly. And so I didn't put too much of my own life into it. I rather felt the written record of these men in the Old Testament, that is, can be examined, can be turned to, can be memorized, rather than anecdotes from the life of some doctor in Wales whom nobody knows and somebody doesn't know.
When you had finished researching the book, deciding what you wanted to include and what you wanted to leave out, and you'd put it all together, done all the editing, etc., and then you'd sent off the manuscript, it came back, and there you had in your hands the printed, published book. Tell us about that experience.
I was thrilled a bit to see it in print. I mean, I'd had it in a computer version, but to see it actually in print and with a beautiful photograph on the front, I was thrilled a bit. I was tempted to rewrite passages, but it was. I also was tempted to include other things, but then I felt these are short passages. My own children do very little reading. The students who came to our home and who sat under our teaching, they admitted that they read very little outside the studies that they had to, they were committed to in their university course. And so I wanted to keep the studies short, and I didn't go into any deep psychological theories. I probably couldn't have handled them adequately anyway. So it's a short, simple, easy book. And I keep it by my bedside and occasionally just pick it up. And as I prepare to go to sleep, I can easily read one of the chapters. It's not a long study.
Now, in closing, we've talked about two of the books that you've written. We've talked briefly about the academic, scientific and research papers that you've written throughout your long career. But has the experience inspired you to continue your writing? And if so, what can we look forward to from you as an author?
I have written several books in medicine, and I would love to write another few books on medicine. I'm boiling over with one or two ideas in medicine. With regard to Christian thought, I'm not a theologian, and I don't know that I could make a worthwhile contribution other than my love and desire to follow Jesus and pass that on to others, and the things that I've learned in my own family life and still try to practice as I look after a wide family only a small proportion of which is genetically related to me, myself.
You've certainly lived a full life, and the books that you've written, along with the academic papers that you've written, certainly shows a lot of credit for you. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you very much indeed. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Lessons for Life, based on the lives of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob and Joseph, is published by Ex Libris and is available direct from the publisher at exlibris.com and all good book stockists. Well, once again, it was my pleasure speaking to my guest today, the author, Professor Peter Elwood. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
This is Rick Bell for Toginet Radio 2.0. Thank you for listening.
Author Voices on Air returns after these short messages.
It's the Fitness Minute with fitness expert Annette Hammond.
When your focus is to lose weight or maintain your present weight, exercising effectively to burn the most calories is crucial. You want to give yourself every advantage to burn as many calories as possible. One good tip is to do your strength training exercises standing up so you can keep your heart rate up. Another tip is to perform multi-joint exercises when you can. For example, as you're doing a forward lunge, add bicep curls while you're coming up from the lunge. Another example is to execute a wide squat. And as you're coming up from the squat, perform a shoulder press. By doing these multi-joint exercises, you're putting more demands on your body, keeping your heart rate up, and working more muscles at the same time. The goal is to burn the most calories during that workout. I'm Annette Hammond. To hear other fitness and weight loss tips, visit our website at AnnetteHammond.com.
Welcome back to Author Voices on Air as we continue the stories behind the stories of today's literature and their authors.
Welcome to Author Voices on Air, and I'm your host, Rick Bell. Our next book is entitled A Medical Scientist Examines the Life of Jesus. During more than 50 years in medical research, the author honed his skills in evaluating evidence. Evidence of the benefit of drugs, from clinical procedures, and above all, from lifestyle. In this book, the author examines the person and the life of Jesus and its relevance to our daily lives and to our relationships. The author, Professor Peter Elwood, joins me now for the first of two interviews about his book. In the first interview, he tells us of the story behind this book. Welcome, Peter. Thank you for joining us. Now, we're here to talk about the first of two books, and this one being A Medical Scientist Examines the Life of Jesus. So let's first of all ask, what made you want to write about the life of Jesus as a scientist, and how did you come up with the idea, and how did that idea eventually become the book that we're talking about today?
Well, I have spent 50 years in medical research, and a large part of that was examining evidence. And basically, I came to the conclusion there is no absolute proof. One has to decide what is the balance of evidence in this situation in relation to medicine. And with Christianity, I acted as a pastor of a church for 14 years, lay and part-time. And I met many people who said, well, is it true? Do you really believe, can you prove to me that Jesus is who he claims to be? And I very frankly say, no, I cannot prove it. But the balance of evidence, which I've examined over many years, leads me to feel that I want to put my trust in the record of Jesus, and I want to follow Jesus in my daily life. I wanted to extend that conclusion of mine to others who would be willing to read my book.
I suppose it's really very much down to faith, you know, someone having faith in their belief, because there's a lot of things that happen in the world and have happened throughout history that can't be explained scientifically or medically or really in any way. But you've really got to trust in, you know, on faith. Would you say that's the case?
Yes, with this story? Certainly would. Faith to me is a decision. And I wanted to link it to science because my faith, not my proof, but my faith is that the world was created. It is not a chance event that life evolved on Earth. Evolution was involved in the development of life, but it was handled, it was directed by somebody with a supreme intelligence. And my faith is my decision that I'm going to believe that, rather than say, no, there was no divine intervention, there was no mind behind it, there was no creator. It's all just a matter of chance.
Would you say this book is directed at believers or non-believers? Or let me put this question another way. Who do you think the book will appeal to and why?
I hope it would appeal to the only person with some interest in science and some knowledge and perhaps some concern about the controversy between science and religion. I do not see a controversy. But I think most people see that, well, you choose one or other, you cannot have both. I would hope the person who is concerned about religion and is interested in science would say, well, here's somebody who's given his life to scientific investigation. What does he say about Jesus and about the life of faith in Jesus and following the teaching of Jesus?
This is very much a book with a lesson for the reader in more than one ways. But if you could choose something from the book, just one thing, one message, one lesson from the book, what would that lesson be?
That's a difficult question. For me, I think a turning point in my whole attitude and my commitment, I think, was examining the origin of Jesus. The virgin birth is a highly vulnerable teaching in Christianity. And I felt, well, is there evidence? Can there be evidence? And so the first chapter of my book, examining the claim that Jesus is divine and is human, that there was a birth involving the intervention of the Holy Spirit of God and a young woman giving a unique person, I think that that was a turning point in my life. If Jesus is an imposter, well, then the whole thing is rubbish. If there's something unique about Jesus, then he's worth listening to, and his teaching is worth following.
There's a lot of books out there that may be said to pretty much cover the same topic, the same ideology, if I can use that term, but in your opinion, as the author and as a believer in this book, what would you say makes it different? What makes it stand out?
I think it is the fact that somebody who's given 50 years, in fact over 50 years, to medical research, to science, and to the examining of evidence, has something to say, and the way that I indicate throughout, that I live it out, that it is, I'm prepared to put my life and my future on the basis of the teaching of Christianity, I think that goes beyond what a theologian, who after all is, most of them are paid to promote Christianity. I think it's rather different when you come on a scientist, somebody whose career has been in science and has made, if I may say so, some very important discoveries in science, that he is prepared to say, I am a believer in the person of Jesus Christ, and I want to follow him, and it has enriched my life enormously.
And that's wonderful to hear. Now let's talk about your experience of writing this book. There is a lot to the book, as our readers, as our listeners will discover when they read the book. So tell us about your experience, the challenges, the hurdles, if there were any, and on the other side of the coin, on a positive note, the you know, the rewarding side of writing this book?
Oh, the 14 years that I led a church in one of the Welsh valleys were the most wonderful years of my life and my wife's life. Seeing the change in those people, seeing the deepening understanding of the meaning of life and the care that was generated within that church and going out from that church was a thrilling experience. Now, I confess that I lectured the church. My whole training was in lecturing medical students. And I lectured the church because I feel that unless we know who we are following, unless we know who the teacher is and what his teaching is, then just a blind and simple belief in Jesus, oh, well, I suppose I should follow Jesus, and it seems to be reasonable teaching. I felt there's no depth to that. I am an academic. I want to know what's written, what's behind the writing, what's behind the claims that are made. And I was able to communicate that in very simple, everyday language. I made sure that my lecturing was understandable, and I wrote and gave out a leaflet, a one-page summary of my talk after every single sermon in that church, because I wanted people to really learn and that their following of Jesus and their following of his teaching was based on knowledge and not just a superficial feeling, well, I'll do this, I suppose it's going to be good. And that enriched the church and really motivated the church to be active in the community. And I watched that development. It was a tremendous thrill.
What's been the general response and feedback that you've had so far from people who've read the book?
Pleasure. I haven't, to be honest, I haven't had a lot of feedback. But those who have written to me or spoken to me have just said that there's a wealth of material in the book, and it requires, it challenges. One or two people use that word, and that's what I would want to do. I want to challenge people to think a bit more deeply and a bit more widely. I'm a lateral thinker. And in medicine, I didn't want to spend my life going for one mechanism in biology or one disease. I'm a lateral thinker. And the challenge that people have spoken of has been a great encouragement to me.
Now, we talked during the introduction about you, and you mentioned as well about your experience in the research and, you know, the field of medicine and so on. And I believe that a lot of your experience in writing has been in academic, in medical, in the research. Tell us a little of that and how that differed from your experience when you were writing this book.
I have published well over 500. I gave up counting when I had published 400 papers in scientific journals, and it probably is well over 600 now. And one or two of them have been very, very frequently quoted and put in the top 10, top 20 papers published by a particular journal. When I came to write this book, I used the same attitude. What is the evidence? Are there alternative explanations? Do they have any credibility? Rather than just writing a treatise on some verse of the Bible or some incident in the life of Jesus, I wanted to say, well, what is this teaching us? What's this showing us? What's behind this teaching? What's behind this incident? So I don't think that my style changed very much. But, of course, I tried to use simple language and not any technical language. And I don't think there's much theological technicalities in my book.
In closing, we've talked a lot about the book and about why you wrote the book and the message within the book and so on. But is there anything that we haven't covered that you feel is important for our listeners and, equally importantly, your readers anything that you think they should know?
I think the way that a belief can enrich life, it can also, of course, distort life. But Christianity is a very positive message. It can enrich life. It can enrich relationships. And after all, the whole basis of life and the whole satisfaction in life comes from relationships, not from material things. And the teaching of Jesus, and I've tried to bring it out in my book, is Jesus in the home, Jesus with his friends, Jesus with his enemies. And at the very beginning of the book, I quote from Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, at the end of the life of one of the characters in Bunyan's dream is Mr. Standfast. And he said, in my life, I have watched for the footprint of Jesus, and I have sought to put my foot into those same footsteps. Now, I have tried to follow the Lord Jesus Christ, and I often paused, and when some challenge came to me or some difficulty was met, I often paused and thought, how would Jesus deal with this? And I think that thought and that process will enrich the marriage and the family life of anybody who reads the book and gets the message and goes back to the original text in the Bible and says, how did Jesus handle this situation? How did he deal with this challenge?
Wonderful words of wisdom indeed there. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you for your encouragement. Marvellous.
A medical scientist examines the life of Jesus is published by Ex Libris and is available direct from the publisher at exlibris.com and all good bookstockers. I would like to once again thank my guest today, the author, Professor Peter Elwood, for joining me and telling us about this wonderful book. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
This is Rick Bell for Toginet Radio 2.0. Thank you for listening.
Join us again next week at this same time as we explore the passion and inspiration behind the works of today's authors right here on Author Voices on Air.